Welcome back to the Go To Food Podcast. Today we're delighted to be joined by a legend of the food industry. We don't say that lightly, Mike Davis. I mean, Frank's Peckham, Europe's top rooftop bar, and also Campbell Arms, my favourite fucking place in the world, apart from the Canton Arms. I must say, I love that as well. Welcome to the show, mate. How are you?
Good. A little bit embarrassed about your introduction.
Why?
Because it's only partially accurate.
Why?
I mean, I am a man.
Yes.
I do own Franks and Campbell Arms.
Okay, so what's wrong there?
No, I mean, I think
Was it Europe's best rooftop bar last year? Yes.
It was named that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Is the Campbell Arms fucking amazing?
Campbell Arms is fucking amazing, yeah.
All right. And so is the Canton Arms, which you also worked in.
I did work at the Canton Arms, yeah.
Quickly, how much was the Canton Arms an inspiration? I know we're diving in, they're getting quite serious quite quickly below.
Well, I mean, in the sense that I didn't really work in that many restaurants before I opened the Campbell Arms. Of course, it was an inspiration. But I think actually, like, there was a period of... Because basically, like, my partners originally when I opened the Campbell Arms were the guys from the Canton Arms, who two of whom also owned the Anchor and Hope and used to own Great Queen Street and own various other things. And so originally, there were five partners, four from the Canton Arms and me. And then in 2016, I bought them out over 6 months.
Was that Trish or not?
Yeah, Trish and Charlie and Rob and Jonathan. And then my partners from Frank's, and I bought them out. And then we kind of went through this process of, I don't know, like stepping out from the shadow, if you like, of the Anchor and the Canton. And the Campbell Arms now, I'd say, I mean, obviously is influenced by things like St. John and the Eagle and stuff like that, but also is very much its own thing, I think.
Of course.
So, and I feel good about that now. And
is there beef between you and Canton or not?
No, absolutely not.
Have you eaten there this year or last year?
No. Ooh. I mean, it's been a long time since I've eaten there, but that's only because...
You're trying to start a thing.
I want to start beef.
Just for ratings. Yeah.
I mean, it depends how deep you want to go. I mean, like, was it difficult to split apart from them? Fuck yeah, it was horrible and not that friendly at the time. Okay. So there were four of them, right? Trish and Charlie, and then Rob and Jonathan. Rob and Jonathan are like more big boy restaurateurs in the sense they've been doing this for years. And I think also it was harder for me with them because I was really young and I felt like I got businessed and I was expecting something a bit friendlier. And... you know, that is naive, but like also if you're a nice person, which I think fundamentally I probably am.
You are, yeah.
I wanted them and expected them to be nicer to me.
Yeah.
They weren't that nice.
Did you work in the
kitchen? As in money wise, I'd say.
I mean, did you work in the kitchen with Trish?
Yes, I did. So, but Trish and Charlie are less of the aggressors in that situation.
Yeah, I get that. But just going back to like the nice food.
Yeah, the nice bit, yeah.
Was Trish a good like mentor? Was she great in the kitchen?
Trish was a good mentor. Yes, she is mental. But like, so am I, and also most chefs are. Most chefs are knobheads, to be honest. I wouldn't think of Trish as a knobhead.
Because when you see like the foie gras toasty, I mean, stuff like that. you don't like it.
I don't like foie gras. I like toasties in pubs anyway. Mm-hmm. I think that should be... If I hadn't worked at the Canton Arms, there would be toasties at the Campbell Arms.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But because I did, I can't, you know?
Yeah, interesting.
So, because I think toasties are basically like the ultimate bar snack. I mean, yeah. I think if you go to pubs in Ireland that basically just have good Guinness or Murphy's and then toasties and or chips and that's it.
Doesn't get better, really.
No, yeah. And sometimes you might get like a bit of crab or something like that if you're really close to the sea or something like that, but more often than not you're not. You're just getting like a fucking Kraft singles plus ham in bread, which is basically the pinnacle of cookery. I mean, in lots of ways there's lots of different food, but is there better food than that? Probably not.
No. I met you a long time ago.
I think we should talk about that.
Yeah,
we should
talk about me.
Yeah.
Or do you want to, you ask a question then we'll find out.
I can tell you my memory of how we met.
Yeah,
which I think is true. So I had gone bankrupt and I begged Margot Henderson to let me come and cook at Rochelle Canteen.
Right.
And I think you were there, but you weren't working there. But I think you were
like
doing
one
some
day
like, yeah,
there.
Like, yeah.
Because it was at that point, Rochelle Canteen was the place that you went. Because then they paid £12 an hour, which then was quite a good wage. And you could get shifts there whenever you wanted.
Almost for their catering stuff.
Yeah, for their catering stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay. So I did a shift with you, I think, just one.
Yeah, I think it was just one shift. And I think you said, someone's just let me down. I'm going to Glastonbury to cook for 2 or 3
Yeah, well, so there was another chef.
And I was like, yes,
exactly.
Incredible.
Well, it was another chef called Matthew Young.
Yes, and I
who you
was
worked
trying to
with.
Flirt with him to get a job.
Yeah, and I think maybe you did work with him.
He took me
else.
To the Dot Kitchen.
That's
Yeah.
And then he had worked at Neil's Yard, and he had a friend called Jared who was
That's
arranging
right.
this Glastonbury gig, and he was like, you need, it'll be you and someone else, so you need someone else.
That's
and
this right.
was like the week before or something like that. And I was like, who the fuck am I going to call now? And I was like, Ben seemed pretty safe. I gave him a call. I was like, do you want to come to Glastonbury with me for 2 weeks? And we basically lived in a tent for 2 weeks.
It was a small tent.
A very small tent from Halfords that
You're
cost £36.
6 foot, what are you?
Six foot six.
Yeah. I'm 6 foot two. I'm clinically obese. You're actually in much better shape than me. But we were inside this tiny tent.
Yeah, what? Cooking for like 200 people
what
three times
cooking?
A day. We were making staff dinner. So it was a crew catering contract, basically. Like, it was a bit of a swizz because Jared, the guy that asked me to do it, had been offered like a pitch on the main food bit, which is obviously potentially really lucrative. And in return, the guy that gave him the pitch was a farmer and he had the Arcadia crew contract that he needed sorting out.
That's right, Arcadia.
So he was like, I need a chef to like cook for these guys breakfast, lunch and dinner, like school dinner style, but nicer than that, you know. It wasn't shit. I don't make shit food.
And no, it was really like, nice. I was like shocked by what the ambition of
it was nice,
you were
actually,
doing in a field.
Well, I think the other thing was I misunderstood the brief because Luke, the farmer, was like, oh, it's £5 per person per meal. And I was like, oh, it's great. And actually it was £5 that he was taking £5 per person per meal.
Oh, you understood it as a cost per head of five.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. I mean,
suddenly Ben's bankrupt again.
I wasn't putting my hand in my pocket on this one, but it was one of the strangest.
It was weird, and the people we did it with as well were really weird. So like,
really
like Jeremy was his name. Remember that South African guy? He was fucking tweaked.
Dude was unhinged.
Absolutely insane. So we like because we built this kitchen in a field, right? But it's just like in the Arcadia, which is Arcadia. I don't really know Glastonbury. I've only been that time.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a big dance field.
Yeah.
Like it's almost like where you end up at the end of the
park, exactly.
Right?
It was like, there's like a big giant metal spider in the middle of it that brings fire and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
DJ
booth
in the middle of it. And all the people that work for Arcadia are like Bristol crusties, basically.
Yeah.
And that means that they kind of like nice food, to be honest.
Yeah.
And so they had been quite specific about wanting like vegetables and like wanting a nice variety of things and not too much gluten at lunch because one of the owners was gluten intolerant and so felt sleepy if you had too much gluten and stuff like that. I was like, all right, fine, whatever. So, and then we just did home cooking, didn't we? We made like
it was
nice
great. I mean, I learned probably more in that. I had not cooked in restaurants apart from this week at Rochelle Canteen. I think I would learn more in that week or 2 weeks with you.
Do you remember like podding peas at the beginning rather than buying frozen peas?
Yeah.
We podded
it was
like,
outrageous. Like,
probably
the food
like 50
that you were doing.
Kilos of peas into a dustbin on the first day.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of fucking peas to do. Anyway.
You're probably the only people in history to say that was their first day at Glastonbury podding peas.
Yeah.
Sure. People are popping pills. Like, do you know what I mean? Podding peas is another way to
I mean, there was a little bit of that later on, but like
not
until the end because we were busy.
Not until the peas were podded.
Mad game.
Yeah.
Also, we were in this field where people were people weren't asleep.
Yeah.
They were walking around on ketamine.
Yeah.
And we were getting up at 6:15 to get the porridge on.
Yeah, that's right.
Like,
yeah.
It was like a mat. It was.
What an amazing.
You went to work maybe after that 2 weeks. I had to take a few days to like recover myself. It was.
I don't know what I was doing.
But my question was, you were young then, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're young now, but your like food knowledge was extraordinary. And so like,
thanks,
that
man.
Can't have just come from the restaurant world, because I don't think you'd been in restaurants for a huge amount of time then.
No.
So were you steeped in that at home, like from a young age? Like, what was your kind of route into food?
I mean, my mum's an amazing cook.
Right, yeah.
My dad loved food, but he cracked his skull when he was in the Air Force, therefore didn't really have a sense of taste or smell, although was always happy to chime in. In fact, that was his MO.
Really?
Was like, was like talking about how things tasted when we all knew that he couldn't taste.
He couldn't taste.
But my mum is an amazing cook, and her mum as well. She was born in Sweden, but they were like Eastern European Jewish immigrants to Sweden and sort of brought that like Eastern European, like Ashkenazi tradition with them of cooking, and also the Jewish thing of like just like having parties.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
So what are we having? Gefilte fish? Are we having challah bread?
Do you know what though? Like, I'm distinctly un-Jewish. I mean, like, yes, in theory, those are my like, those things should be my things, but they're really not. Like, I think the first time I tried a fish ball was when I was like in my 20s.
That's insulting.
From M&S.
Oh,
that's
really?
Even worse.
By the way, quite delicious.
Yeah, they are good, but they're too sugary. Get up to Panzer's Deli.
Panzer's is great.
Oh, for God's sake, it's so good. How fucking good does it feel to be you? Because obviously you're in charge of
what
Frank's.
What a fucking question.
You're in charge of Campbell Arms. Like, for us who love, you know, the food scene, especially in London, think it's like the most rock and roll to be thing to be a part of. You control two of the great bastions of the food scene and drink scene. I mean, how, like, does that, you wake up in the morning, you look in the mirror.
Does it feel like that?
Does it feel good?
No.
Or not, like, how does it feel?
It's interesting because the question is like, you should feel good for doing this. And actually, there are parts of it that I'm really proud of. But my job is hard.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the answer. Yeah. It's hard.
Do you feel pressure? I mean, there's a huge pressure.
And getting harder? Troubles. Sorry.
Do I feel pressure? Yes and no. Like, at times. Historically, yes. Less so these days. But yeah, I mean, there's constantly pressure in a way, because it's like, Frank's, for example, is like opening a restaurant every year, which is fucking insane.
Yeah.
You know, because there shouldn't be restaurants on car parks. And obviously there is one, and it's very basic. But like, nonetheless, you have to build it every year, and you have to hire a team every year, and like, hiring people is probably the single most stressful part of the hospitality industry. Campbell Arms is something that I'm deeply proud of, but like, is, you know, it's so personal to me as well. So like, I feel the ups and downs of it. If it was a sort of living thing, then I interact with it as a living thing. Mm. And the kind of permutations of its life affect me a lot.
Campbell Arms just turned 10, right?
Yeah.
So like, London institution length of time.
Yeah,
basically.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, it, I mean, yeah. Not many get that far.
By the way, I just want to say, that was quite a serious answer, but I'm really happy that you feel that way about Frank's and the Campbell Arms.
Oh,
I'm not being ungrateful. If I could just, sorry, to come back, but something just to throw in there is that my sister thinks it's really annoying that people think that I'm cool.
And never said you were cool.
I think this is the thing, is that you kind of did, because you're does it feel to be this
guy? No, I'm joking.
But like, but I mean, you know, the fact is that like, I still have, you know, I've got a job, and it's like, I love what I've done, and it would be hard to imagine doing something else, but yeah, it's fucking, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So my question is, because the restaurant, the distance between the consumer and what it takes to run a restaurant, I think is much bigger than people realize, which is probably what you're speaking to there. But secondly, there would be an assumption, you hit 10 years, it's established, you're an institution, that things get easy. But I know that the reality of running restaurants in London is maybe getting harder and harder. So how does that feel to you?
Well, so I'd say like, there are things that get easier, definitely. Yeah. You know, the Campbell Arms, whatever it appears from the outside, is not like, it doesn't make shitloads of money. It makes some money, right?
Yeah.
Which is great in London to make a profit as a restaurant, right? But I think people don't really realize that on the outside, because it, you know, just making a profit being a good thing, for example, is, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I think the point is that like, I worry less about that now. So in a way, that is easier.
Yeah, right.
Because like, I kind of know what it is, and I know what it does.
Yeah.
And like, yes, I can improve it and I can work on it and so on and so on. But I'm not like, my ambition isn't like driving me to sleepless nights anymore. Yeah. And so that is easier.
Yeah, okay.
Because I'm a bit more chill.
Mike, I want to take you back to 2009. You're, as you said earlier, standing atop a car park in Peckham, piss-stained staircase leading up to it. Did you ever think, you know, 14 years on, you'd have the best, you know, rooftop bar in Europe? I mean, like when you looked at it, did you see a kind of potential end game there? Or
no,
like,
I've never thought like that. I've never thought about, because I only found out later on, someone told me, who understands a bit more about business than I do, that you're supposed to go into business understanding how to get out of it. And I wish I fucking knew that before I started. But like, I've never thought like that. I've always, because you got to understand as well, like when I opened Frank's, I was 20.
Mm. Yeah.
So, you know, when you're 20, you're a fucking idiot for one, but also like, you just, I can't speak for everyone, but like, I was a precocious twat, and I was also like, perhaps like unwarrantedly confident and excited as well. That's genuine. But like, no, I didn't think of that it would be anything. I think the other thing is, you are, like, obviously it's changed quite a lot, but Frank and I, so Frank's my partner, and he, one of my partners, and he asked me if I wanted to do Frank's. Again, we had six partners originally. Me and Frank were two of those. Frank had done a business plan. He had like done all of that stuff. So I was involved past that point in terms of like, I was involved in the setup and the like, the work. But like, what? But in terms of the prepare, like be preparing for it and stuff like that, he had like written a business plan. It wasn't what I would call a particularly developed business plan, but like it was a type of business plan. Yeah. And he'd like taken it to people, most of whom had just like laughed it off, right? But the business plan was basically for like 30 people to come per week, and that would allow us to break even. Yeah, because it was, you know, it cost like, I think it cost maybe £20,000 or something like that total, between six people to get it set up. And you know, that is not very much money even then.
Yeah,
it wasn't
yeah.
that much. And like, I mean, it felt like a lot at the time, because we were all really young, and it was like, money that we had or didn't have. But no, I didn't think about it being what it was. But I think that's why it is what it is.
For those who don't know what it is, can you just give us, like, if we come on a sunny evening in July, what do we expect to drink? What do we expect to eat? Just give paint a picture for those who don't know.
The thing about Frank's, which is unique, is the view, right? So, and that's also the thing that we've had no control over. But the fact is that, like, South London has uninterrupted views of London because it doesn't have any high-rise buildings. So in Peckham, not yet, although there is a development plan for the Elsham Centre, which is fucking annoying. But
which would come in the way?
Yeah.
Hey, really?
In part of the way.
Yeah.
Like, I think the point is, from the roof, you can see from Battersea Power Station to the Millennium Dome. And there aren't many places that you can see that in one go. And that also means that you have the full trajectory of the sun across the day. So you, from sunrise to sunset, you have like a clear, uninterrupted view of the sky. So like those things are things we don't control, but those are things that make Frank's unique.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you drink? I mean, it's very stripped back. It's very basic. Like the original concept was sort of Riviera style aperitivo, because that's what me and Frank liked at the time. We were just kind of heavily into drinking Negronis. I mean, this was 15 years ago, but like that was...
And was so, it originally called Frank's Campari Bar?
Yeah, it was called Frank's Cafe and Campari Bar.
That's right.
Because we got sponsorship from Campari.
Right.
So they gave us a bit of cash. They gave us some stock and stuff like that. That's why the roof was originally red. It's still red.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
But yeah, so, I mean, did we popularize the Negroni in London?
Yeah, you did. I was saying that to you earlier, wasn't
I? He was going to ask you that. Did you popularize it? I think you did, yeah.
I think maybe we did. But like...
So we like maybe people in restaurants were drinking
Negronis. Yes, they were.
But I don't think your man or person on the street, every person we've asked, what's your favorite cocktail on this podcast,
Negroni,
fundamentally said a Negroni.
Yeah.
I don't think that would have been the answer in 2009.
No. And it's such a boring choice. I mean, Negronis are great, and no shade to anyone that likes Negronis. But like... I've drunk too many of them, it's fair to say.
Yeah, possibly,
like,
yeah.
No, I didn't think about it being what it is now, but I do think that that is why it is what it is. And in terms of what it is now, it is a very fun bar, which sort of feels like going to a festival where you can have very simple, nicely made cocktails or just like cheap drinks and like food from a barbecue that's like very basic, but delicious.
Yeah.
That's it.
You must have had some fucking late nights at the BC building just next door. I mean, just take us through those memories, your 20 to 30, 10 years of partying. Any big ones stand out? Any horrible moments where you had to go to the, I don't know, into the kitchen behind the barbecue the next day?
I mean, yeah. Do they stand out? No, because I've probably like suppressed them in a sort of haze of like horrid disgust. No, I think like what I would say is that when I think about Frank's in its early days, it does kind of feel like the Wild West, because it was like a full cash business. We didn't understand tax. We didn't have a company structure. You know, it was literally like, and also, you know, I said the business plan was for 30 people to come a day. Like on the opening weekend, there was a heat wave and we had like 400 people, like on our first night. And we had no fucking idea what we were doing. I mean, I was 20 and Frank was 21 or 22. And like we were taking cash in, and like me and Frank were counting it at the end of the night and leaving in like just with it in a plastic bag, just like in a bucket.
Seems legit. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But that was literally it. So it's like, were there any rules? Not really. No. I mean, I had a full-time job the first season of Frank's. I worked full-time as a chef at the Anchor and Hope Monday to Thursday, and then I did doubles Monday to Thursday at the Anchor, and then I worked the rest of the weekend at Frank's, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I couldn't have done that later on in my life.
No.
But also, like, was I doing a good job? Certainly not. Did I even know how to do a good job? No. And so I was just kind of doing what I knew how to do, and also learning about like how fun life could be, having grown up in the suburbs in London. Frank grew up around here and he was a bit more like London. I think he kind of helped me to enjoy the city a little bit more.
You've got a cookbook coming out.
Yeah.
Later this year, I believe.
July, yeah.
Yeah. What can we expect as the dishes in it? Because obviously you sit behind a barbecue in Frank's, but also you sit behind this incredible place.
I've got one with me. I've got a printout. It's not a book, but yeah, so if you want to have a look at it.
Oh, I'd love to. But it's called Cooking for the People.
It's called Cooking for People.
Sorry, Cooking for People, sir.
Yeah.
I put in an unnecessary the.
Yeah.
And it is a book of menus, dinner party menus, I guess, which are mapped out together with a shopping list and a prep list, so that if you want to make it a bit easier for yourself, you can. I think that like the idea of entertaining is really nice, but it's often a bit of a non-starter for non-chefs, because, and for chefs to be honest, because it's a fucking pain in the ass.
Yeah.
But I think the thing is that like it can be really nice, but I don't, you know, when you go to a dinner party or you're hosting a dinner party, I think it's nice to be able to actually like sit down for a bit and fucking enjoy it, as opposed to just trying to cook things too late or worrying about this being that or whatever. It's just, I think people worry too much about food being just so, and I don't think that it needs to be. And also I feel like there's lots of things as a chef that you do to like make your life easier. You don't fucking go into a Friday night service making everything from scratch.
No.
And if you do, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
What's your favorite dish from the book? Or the favourite recipe, I should say.
That's a good question. I don't know. There is
or dinner. I mean, yeah, they sit menu, entire yeah.
Oh, sorry.
I think probably my favourite menu is, there's a summer menu. The main course is just fresh pasta with raw tomatoes and chopped red onions and chopped olives and burrata. And you just make the pasta and cook it and toss it all together raw and have that as your, it's my mum used to make something like that for us, just with dry pasta and like cheap mozzarella, but like, and cheap tomatoes and everything. The raw, basically the heat, the residual heat of the pasta, a bit of pasta water is enough to kind of do the cooking. And it's so minimal. Obviously, if you spend time making fresh pasta, that's a bit more effort.
Yeah.
You have to do that. I think the dessert is peaches with like zabaglione or something like that. And like an almond cluster or like almondy bits, sprinkles.
Do you still get behind the stove at the Kemble Arms?
So yes, well, recently, yes, because of staffing issues. But no, I don't really anymore. I'd aim not to, I guess.
When did you sort of transition from...
Well, full transparency, I had a breakdown in 2020. I mean, I don't know how much you want to talk about. I'm happy to talk about is it okay to talk about it?
No, I read about it. Yeah
for sure.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Fine with me talking about it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Written beautifully about it.
Right, so I think... In 2019, I had a ridiculously difficult year.
Yeah.
Like, in January, I lost 80% of my kitchen team in one hit. And just coincidentally, by the way, I'm not some fucking megalomaniacal prick that just pushes people away. At least I hope I'm not.
But no, like, it's just a situational.
It was a situational thing. And then the result of that was like me being back in the fold in a sort of 100-hour week type way, which... It's fine if you're 25, sort of, not really, but like if you're 30, then your body can't really take it.
Yeah.
And I know that's not that much of a difference to people on the outside world, but like as a chef, you really feel it. And like, so I managed to hire people, eventually hired a head chef and a sous chef, and started to like switch off a little bit. But then when we got to Christmas, the same thing started to happen again. We started to lose people when I just had a new team and I was like having to carry it. But I started to get quite physically unwell. I think my body was starting to like shut down.
Yeah.
And then I got really mentally unwell. I started having hallucinations, like anxiety nightmares in the daytime, which is terrifying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I don't know if you've ever taken acid, but like it's like when you're looping on psychedelics and you can't separate from, because you have no control over your like thinking at that moment. And so I would be looping these like visual hallucinations of anxiety things that to do with work, right? And it was, and I thought that I was going mad and I wouldn't be able to talk to people, like as in actually talk, which was fucking terrifying, man. It was really intense. And then so basically like tried to go to work, couldn't deal with that. And someone noticed at work, Vicky, who's a good friend of mine and our ops director, and she was like, I think maybe you're not okay. And I was like, yes, I think so too. And then basically couldn't really like leave my house. And my wife now, my then girlfriend, my now wife, Benita, had to like call my parents and was like, can you come and help me? Because I literally can't deal with this.
Yeah.
Just pre-lockdown this is, right?
Yeah. So this is, yeah, exactly. This is just pre-lockdown, beginning of 2020. Mm. And they basically called my partners and were like, look, he can't work for a bit. And they were really supportive, to be fair. And I had 6 months off. It's funny though, because like, I don't think I would have chosen for that to happen. It was fucking awful.
Yeah.
Like, I'm kind of happy that it did in some ways, because I was forced to change things in my life. But what I was thinking was funny was that, so basically through that point, I started taking antidepressants and I was doing therapy and this kind of stuff. And then I was taking like a maximum dose of sertraline, which is like one of the commonly available antidepressants. Because I was suicidal, to be honest. And that's the thing that you get to if you're suicidal, they try to like balance you out with this thing. I would say taking that level of antidepressants for me made me unreasonably optimistic. And that's what's funny, because like what I then did was open another restaurant, which was a fucking stupid idea.
Was that Mike's?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like that was as in it was just like, because on paper, if you say to someone, I've just had a breakdown from like 10 years of burnout, but I'm fine now, I'm going to open another restaurant. It's like,
tell you what, I need more work.
Yeah, exactly. It was fucking mental. But like, that was the thing of being unreasonably optimistic, feeling like, fuck, I'm doing so much better now and I feel really great.
Take
like,
on the world.
Yeah, it was very much that. And yeah. And well, then,
I mean, the good thing is Kemba Alums is now 10 years strong. You said it's joined the sort of, you know, golden mile of, you know, that's a great, great point 100%. To get past. And it's an amazing place, respected by so many people around the whole world. Who are the coolest, like, people you cook for in that place? So do you have some, like, cool local celeb regulars?
So, I don't know. I mean, we have cooked for some famous people over the years. Yeah, Natalie Portman.
Oh, yeah.
Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, yeah.
Brendan Gleeson. Some, like, schlabs. Yeah. Fergus Henderson comes quite a lot, which is always cool.
That must be the sort of the greatest for a guy who loves St. John as much as you.
It's always nice to have him there. Giorgio Locatelli's been, who was also a bit of a hero of mine.
Do you love that sort of local area of Camberwell? Because it just gets better and better, right?
Yeah.
Got amazing Chinese place and everything. Like where would you go if you're not going to eat the Campbell Arms?
I mean, obviously Silk Road is great and it's just reopened.
Yeah.
They just
so reasonably priced.
They just literally like bought the Caravaggio restaurant next door and moved into that.
Have they?
And they've made it look a little bit like a Chinese airport. but the food is exactly the same, which in a way is weird because there's like, it's a lot smarter than it used to be.
Yeah.
But the food is exactly the same. But yeah, and I love Theo's as well.
So good.
Yeah. And Theo himself is a fucking legend.
He's a nice man.
There is a Theo, is there?
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. It's called Theo's.
Theo.
Great place, great pizza.
Yeah, it's really great, man. And like, I've always loved what they do. And
Crooked Well before or not? No, not a big fan.
Well, as in I've never eaten there.
No, not to eat. I mean to drink.
No, it's where not really drink? My vibe.
No.
Do you go to Stormbird? Do you go to
Hermit's Cave or the Old Dispensary for me.
Oh, nice.
Light Pints. But these days now... the team go to the Grove House, which is called Grove Tavern, which is just like, it used to be called the Grove House, maybe. I can't remember. You know the one that used to be at Grand Union?
It's Grove House.
Grove House?
Yeah.
Embarrassing that I don't know the name. But
do you live locally? Or are you
living in Forest Hill?
Do you? I used to live in Forest Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful.
I want to know, like, obviously you've worked in lots of different places, both of you. What was like the best kind of post-match routine when you finished up at work? Like, what were the good nights out? Chinatown, or is that still quite old-fashioned? Like, where were you going? What were you doing?
I mean, the thing is, so many nights out are just like a school disco, or if you would permit me, a home roast, which is essentially just getting fucked in the pub.
Yeah.
Those are probably some of my most treasured moments, as well as maybe some of my most, like, I don't know, regretful at times. But like, because invariably what ends up happening is you might go somewhere for a bit and then go to someone's house.
Mm.
And that's kind of fun. So no, do I have like a sort of like a route planned for you? Not really. But no, we never really did the like Chinatown thing or anything like that. I guess like horse meat disco on a Sunday night occasionally.
I should say just quickly, and I was telling you before, had a great first day at your pub, the Campbell Arms, over 4.5 years ago, still with Rosie. So that's good news.
Really?
We'd like to thank you. We'd also like to thank Milo, who promised me the whole meal would be free, who was your old manager, kept on bringing me drinks and food, you know, course after course, for what felt like 3-4 hours.
Months.
Serena behind the stoves cooking up a storm, and then he charged me for both her time, his drinking, and of
quite right too.
So yeah, like nuclear stealth upselling.
Yeah he's a great guy, Milo, isn't he?
Proper, is a great guy.
Sounds like a good man to have as your general manager. He was the general manager.
Yeah.
I've used no imagination.
Where's he going now? He's going to the National Theatre, is he?
What, is this a Negroni?
This is a Negroni, because I wanted to get you talking about Frank's Campari Bar.
What the fuck is this, Ben?
Yeah. And you've already done the story.
That looks very good.
But I thought, you know. Anyway.
Well, I'm guessing we're about to drink a Negroni, but your go-to cocktail isn't a Negroni. You said you were sick and tired of them. We're going to have one now. But what is your go-to cocktail? Thank you, Ben.
Does it make me a wanker if I say a martini?
No, not at all. How do you have it?
I mean, I like a dirty martini, really, with gin. So, like, yeah. So, I think gin martini with an olive, basically. But I quite like it with a brine wash. So, yeah.
Do you ever get people coming to Campbell Arms and go, like, this isn't a pub?
Yeah, definitely.
Still?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
imagine in the beginning,
because you can't really like. I mean, I'm going to play the other side here, but a bit like Canton, they put a bowl of crisps and they pretend it's a boozer.
No, but it is a boozer.
You can have a couple of drinks there.
Yeah,
whereas Camberwell, you can't really in the summer.
All right, so I'll give you the soundbite that I give to the staff about this, right? Which is that we are not a pub in terms of like scratchings and pints necessarily, but we are a pub in terms of like being made to feel welcome and accessibility.
Yeah,
and I think that to me is what's important about it being a pub, not a restaurant. Because I think you can go there and feel like you're getting the same quality as you might get somewhere more formal without the formality.
Sure.
And I think that's always been something I've been wanting to do and wanting to achieve. And I feel like we have.
I haven't been for a while. Apologies.
All right, then.
No, but because you used to, you could walk in at the front, you had all the round tables and there's a bar and you can order, you can have a pint and a bag of crisps. That's a, that was a thing.
You can definitely do that. We don't have crisps anymore.
Okay, right.
But we do have a bar menu.
Yeah.
You can eat you can have pork fat on toast and like have a pint. And also we've just gone free of Thai, which means we can finally, after 10 years, make a profit on selling beer, which we've never been able to. Who have you gone free from?
Do you know the difference? Do you know the difference between Tide and non-Tide?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, fine. So we were tied to Enterprise or Stonegate and we've just gone free of Thai.
Nice.
So as of March, we will have a beer selection that we have chosen.
You can select,
from our own, you know, from various suppliers, and we will actually be able to make GP on
because you're no longer tied in.
Not paying a 200% markup on all of our beers.
Mike, if people come around to yours for supper, we ask everyone, what's your go-to little snacks on offer? Quite an important start to the meal.
Crisps and olives.
What kind of crisps?
It's a good question. I mean, I don't know. This isn't really necessarily like a pre-dinner crisp, but my current crisp of choice is a Wotsit Crunch. Cool. I don't know if you're familiar with this.
I am.
They're basically like Wotsits making knickknacks. And they're fucking
they're unbelievable, yeah.
Yeah. My current other like tipple of the month crisp wise is the Walker's Max spicy prawn cocktail.
Ooh.
Very nice.
Which is a relatively new thing. Fuck me, I love it. Because in theory, I should say something like, you know, achingly trendy like Torres or like Dalamar or something like that. But the fact is, like, I feel like if you're having crisps and olives, because the thing is, there are lots of nice things to have. I quite like Bombay mix actually, because I think one of your questions is like underrated spots or something like that, right? There are two places I have in mind. One of them is an Indian bakery in Tooting called Pooja.
Oh yeah,
and you can buy different heats of Bombay mix, which they make in house, and like you can buy just the serve and you can buy the different parts of it as well. But I do quite like Bombay mix.
And what's the other one? You might as well give us the other one now. Hidden gem, underrated spot.
Well, so I was gonna say the offshoot of Silk Road, Lao Dao on the Walworth Road. So like Tim, who has opened Lao Dao, is, well, I don't know. I mean, he refers to the owner of Silk Road as his uncle. Are they related?
We don't know.
Not sure.
Yeah.
But Tim is someone that I met when I first went to Silk Road with Frank maybe 15 years ago. And he has now got his own restaurant on Walworth Road called Lao Dao, which is another Xinjiang region restaurant. And it's fucking great.
What do you go for there?
That is golden.
Everything on the menu is wicked. Yeah. I mean, I don't think that you can go far wrong. And also, they'll happily recommend for you if you want. There was a couple of like unusual noodle dishes. There was one noodle dish which was like almost like little gnocchi. Because it's like rice noodles, I guess, but like made into, clearly like rolled into thicker pieces and then cut like gnocchi. And then and then served like a pasta dish with Chinese stuff. As in, you know, if you think about making a pasta dish and you're using pasta water and the starches reducing and emulsifying with the fats and the blah, blah, blah. So there was like a sort of tomato-y thing, but with lots of chili and garlic and fresh chilies and peppers and stuff. It was a bit mad, but it was really delicious.
What's your hangover drink of choice?
I used to think that you could work your way through a hangover, and I no longer believe that to be the case. No. The older I get, the harder it is. And the fact is, my hangovers now don't finish until I wake up the next day. So like the whole day my hangover gets worse, and then when I go to bed, that's the relief that I need, and when I wake up the following day I'm okay. But like, so I don't think that I can drink through a hangover.
No.
Usually I would have like a selection of soft drinks on the go if I was really hungover. So it might be like Ribena in a bottle, probably a Lucozade original, bit of a weird shout, and maybe some kind of juice, like an apple juice or something like that. Possibly even like one of those posher bottles of apple juice if I get my hands on it.
And what do you
and eat? A fizzy water as well.
How posh?
What are you eating?
Well, like Rinkton
Duskins
Farm,
or something okay,
like
right,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay.
What are you eating to match?
I mean, pizza.
I can imagine you've had to do some fucking shocking shifts whilst feeling hungover.
Yes, I've done some. Yeah. But these days, I feel like there's a camaraderie in being tired and emotional together.
You got one of the best private rooms in London, I think.
It's wicked, isn't it? Yeah. Mm. Thanks for saying, man.
Did you go to Milo and Kev's
Yes, I did.
Supper club? Yeah, I was there. Good.
Well, supper club.
Were you not there?
I thought you were going to say Kev's birthday. I have been.
Did Kev work
in
there as well?
Yes, Kev did work there, yeah. That's how I know Milo.
Yeah, I saw him out in Marseille, because I was at Marseille for a couple of months. Yeah.
Marseille. Now he's in Paris. My favourite restaurant in the world is in Marseille.
Go, what is it?
It's called Chez Etienne.
Oh yeah, I know it very well. Etienne. Yeah, yeah. Very 70s or 60s interior, photos all over the wall.
Yeah.
Couple of pizzas.
Wood oven, cook pizzas in the wood oven.
Yeah.
Drag the embers out, cook steaks.
Yeah, we went there. Amazing place.
Pizza for the table, like with cheese or with cheese and anchovies or olives. Or just tomato and olives and Herbe de Provence. You know those like Moroccan olives or Provençal olives that are like baked in the sun and cracked and then marinated in Herbe de Provence. And then, so you have that for like however many people are at the table and then they bring out a steak for however many people, which is just salt and mustard and a green salad plus things cooked in the wood oven.
Like, the green salad was actually one of the best things. In the way, I mean, it's all amazing, but like so effortless.
It is effortless. And like, and then aubergines and tomatoes cooked in the wood oven with like painful amounts of garlic and oregano, dried thyme, etc. And then, cold Cronenberg, chilled local rosé.
Marseille is one of the coolest cities on the table. In Europe, isn't it? The food in there is amazing.
It's just a fucking amazing city.
Yeah, everyone's like, young, cool, sexy, and great at cooking.
And it's kind of it's kind of edgy in a way that like harbour towns can be.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of movement of people and things.
Yeah.
You don't know if you're going to get shot or shot. You've obviously worked at, you know, some great places. We always ask, what are the best staff lunches, staff suppers? Like, where's the best staff meal you ever had?
That's a good question. I mean, I actually did two stages at St. John Bread and Wine, maybe 15 years ago, something like that. Two separate weeks. And they, at the time, did breakfast and an afternoon meal for everyone, and they would sit down together to eat it in the restaurant. And that was really like, I think that was quite important to me in terms of like seeing how it should be done. Just like, cause it would be just, you might have like scrambled eggs or something, I don't know what, like something simple like eggs and toast or something like that. And then in the evening you'd have something a bit more exciting or whatever. But like to all sit around the table, also I was so young and everyone seemed really cool and like a bit older. So it was kind of like quite glossy in terms of memory. But I'd say there was my favorite. I mean,
it's hard to achieve that, getting everyone sat down. I mean, you're saying it like it's something that it doesn't happen in
restaurants. No, it doesn't, because like, so for example, at the pub, we do two meals, but not everyone sits down. I think it tends to be the case that people come a little bit early and we pay for people to be there earlier than we need them to be there in order that they can sit to eat before the shift. In the evening anyway. In the daytime, I mean, it's usually just, it's mostly chefs who are there because we're not very busy at lunch.
I can imagine a lot of nightmares in the kitchens of the various places. What's the worst day or the worst? You told a brilliant story about the chef having a whitey and everything. You had to like pull him out by his feet, and Aaron Milton told a similar one. What's the worst day you can remember in any of the kitchens you worked in?
So, I mean, I think there's been a few where like I've been injured myself. One, in my first proper restaurant job in Manchester, I got branded by a chef in service during an altercation, which was really shit.
Go on, tell
us. Branded, like, heated up something over a...
I've got a scar here from it. Oh, yeah. Man. So, yeah, we...
Premeditate. I mean, they've heated something up to...
Yeah. Right, they had something in under the... Well, they had a pair of tongs under the salamander. Was it being preheated to brand me? Probably not, but like, but it was there.
It was there.
And then he put it into my arm.
What was the argument over?
Christ.
What was the argument over? So I was on the garnish section in a very busy, quite shit restaurant called Simply Heathcote's. And the garnish section was really difficult because I had like one solid top and the menu had 10 main courses, all of which had 2 to 3 garnish elements. Plus I was on the fryer, so I was doing chips and fish and chips. And also sides. And one of the sides was buttered spinach.
You'd been set up to fail.
Yeah, I mean.
Sure. No?
Yeah, well, basically, yeah, I was a one person. Like, how you, like, I mean, yeah, so what, like 40 different components?
And you were what? You must have been 18, 19?
Yeah, exactly. And unsure about whether I should put salt in everything unless someone told me. So, but yeah, he basically, the head chef had decided that he was going to be off on quite a few Saturday nights. And the problem with that was that the sous chef was the only guy in the kitchen who could cook the meat and the sauce. So then the guy on the larder, who was my, who would be working next to me, had to do the pass. But I don't think he was that good at reading. And obviously like the pass, because you gotta remember that like I was basically at the end of like quite a different era of being a chef, where like you would go and get a job in a kitchen because out of prison, that was fine. And so this guy was quite a scary, like out of prison kind of a guy who had been in prison for GBH.
we didn't get on that well anyway because I was Southern and therefore gay, and that was a problem for him, apparently.
Right.
Well, obviously, he was going down super hard. We were all going down on a Saturday night. It's 180 covers booked. We were fucking, like, in the weeds. And he didn't, in my opinion, he wasn't calling the sides. And I feel like he didn't, he, like, waited and then was like, actually, I need, like, six buttered spinach. And you got to remember, so I've got a solid top, which is, like, probably 90 centimeters or something like that, right? And I've got, it's covered in pans,
yeah,
right? And in order to cook that much spinach, which is obviously large volume that wilts down, I had to get a large pan onto the stove, which is to, in order to get hot to then cook all the spinach. And whilst I'm doing that, I'm getting behind on everything else. So I get a pan on the stove, but he's like yelling at me that I'm behind and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I lose my cool. I told him to fuck off. He didn't like that very much. So he came around to my section. He like started having an argument with me, pushed me, and I went like that. And he just fucking dug this thing into my arm. And I was really scared and upset, but also quite angry. Yeah. Not very aggressive person, not aggressive at all, actually. This guy fucking was. And so I was out of my depth, to be honest. It was a really like awful moment. And he didn't get sacked for that anyway. So
well, did service then just carry on?
Yeah.
It's quite rock and roll. It did.
It's horrible.
And then the other one I was going to tell you about actually was more recent because I was going to take this my watch off. Can you see this scar here?
Good.
Yeah. So obviously it looks extra mad because of the indent of my watch. But we do a lot of butchery at the pub. We do a lot of whole carcass butchery, which I'm largely responsible for, but like handing over to people, teaching people about.
Yeah.
And last year, just before our baby was due, like in April, I was basically butchering a beef leg, and I slipped. And I put a very, very sharp knife into my wrist and cut.
Christ.
So I cut like 40% of the ulnar artery and 20% of the sensory nerve bundle.
And what level of panic did that?
Well, so what happened was I slipped and I basically had the knife going like this.
Yeah.
Slipped and it went up into my arm. And I realized that it was quite bad. And so I said something to Joe, who is our manager and like friend, a great friend of mine, he's been there since day one, and he could see that I was not okay, and I think there was a lot of blood because it was arterial.
Yeah, it must have been. Yeah,
basically, like walked through the kitchen, came out into the restaurant, and then because I'd sworn quite loudly, and then all the tables in the restaurant, because it was at lunch, you know, had like stopped doing what they were doing, and this guy came over and he was like, "I'm an A&E doctor, can I help?"
Thank fuck.
And he basically like, you know, showed me what to do, and we tourniqueted it because it was an arterial thing, so you're not supposed to do that for too long. And then an ambulance came, took me to King's, and I started to realize I couldn't feel the back of my hand. And then eventually, like, it was quite dramatic actually, because what happened was I went into the waiting room, waited for 3 hours, which wasn't too bad because it was fine.
You're no longer
point,
losing
it was
blood
strapped, right,
okay.
And then someone opened it and they were like, "Oh, this doesn't look too bad," and just sewed it up. And they were like, "Yeah, you're going to be fine." And then I said, "Is it weird that I can't feel the back of my hand?" And they were like, "Yes, that's not right." And I had thought that was just from the bandage.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, she was like, "Okay, I've got to speak to plastic surgery at St. Thomas's, and then you got to go and wait back in the waiting room." So I went back to the waiting room, and she had put like a few stitches in this cut, which at that point we didn't realize I had severed the artery. So I was in the waiting room at King's, surrounded by people. And it burst.
Well, I'm feeling all lightheaded.
Sorry. I can stop.
No, in a good way.
But like, yeah, it burst. It burst. It started like, it started like pissing through the bandage, shooting blood into the waiting room. And like, I was a bit alarmed. I was like, can someone just help me?
Have
please?
A look at this. Yeah.
Because like, as in like, could someone go and get a doctor? Because I don't want to go anywhere now. Because yeah, I'm fucking like, and fortunately one person was not hysterical and was like, "Yeah, I'll just go and get someone." And then they saw me sort it out quite quickly. I went to St. Thomas's and had like plastic surgery the next morning, the next day.
Well, that's slightly,
that was a bad day.
Slightly beats your sous chef having a joint and passing out.
It does, yeah. No, you've really...
That the kind of thing you were looking for?
Yeah, that was very good.
Really raised the game.
I think we should move on to your food sections, where Ben's going to reveal some little treats he's made personally for you, which he hopes you're going to enjoy. Just quickly, what's been your worst fad in cooking over the last 15 years?
Small plates.
Small plates.
Fucking small plates, man. I'm so glad it's over. Jesus Christ. This fucking, like, this false economy of, like, it feeling cheaper. It's like, it's not cheaper.
No, it's more expensive, yeah.
Yeah.
And also, like, I don't want a fucking small place.
Do you like to go to San Sebastian?
Yes, but that's different.
Yeah.
So I went to San Sebastian for my first time last year.
Go on.
And, you know, the thing is that was totally organic. It's like, that's how they do things there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can't just...
Oh, no, so good. Where did you go over there?
Wow.
What's going on here?
For those listening...
Story behind this,
Mike.
Okay.
Go on. Well, why don't you tell us the story?
The story behind this is that the best... I think one of the best meals I've ever had... It's a long time ago. I came in the Camberwell Arms, and you did a crab curry.
Yeah, we used to do that. Yeah,
and I don't know if you meant us to get it. We got that and roast potatoes, and it was just the most outrageous meal I've ever had.
Amazing,
actually, photographic ever.
Well, for those listening, Ben has revealed
this is not your curry
shell of a crab, and he's now pouring
Jesus
a full
Christ.
Crab curry,
mate. This is making me so happy.
This is a crab.
I can't believe you've done this.
This is quite incredible.
That was a thing, right? Your crab.
Yeah. We used to do crab curry.
Like,
yeah.
Whole crab in a curry sauce.
Yeah,
you just had to get.
Wow, that looks amazing.
And the potatoes we used to do were light roast potatoes. They were like in the fryer, but they were light roast potatoes.
They were in the fryer, yeah.
Yeah, we used to like, you know, blanch them and then.
To order the two things together, or was that?
Well, I mean, they were chips, weren't they? So I guess in the way that curry.
Your use of thermos flasks is incredible.
Yeah, I did think that actually, because I was surprised and edified by how cold the Negroni still was.
Yeah, I
made that at 7 o'clock this morning.
Did you?
We could quickly ask you, what's your go-to delivery order if you're at home, you're feeling shocking?
I mean, again, pizza is always up there.
Where would you be getting them from?
With pizza?
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of depends how, like, what level of iniquity we've been at the night before.
But, okay.
I mean, I think, like, you know, arguably, Neapolitan pizza will see me right if I just need a quick fix.
Yes.
However, if I'm like, Benita's out, that's my wife, yeah. I'm like... I hate myself because of what I've been doing the day before, and I'd like to continue that journey of self-loathing.
Yeah.
I might consider a Domino's or a Papa John's, like that. I think that's probably where I'm at, yeah.
Dish you cook the most midweek?
Pasta. Easily once a week with tomatoes or courgettes, even out of
Fresh?
Season. No, definitely not. No,
okay. Is your wife veggie?
She's vegan.
She's vegan?
And the household is vegan, basically.
Okay.
So I'm vegan at home. Not in terms of takeaways and stuff like that, but yeah, I eat vegan food at home.
Okay. Fair play.
Which is a surprise.
What about a three-course dinner? If it wasn't going to be vegan, because vegan, we can't restrict our audience, quite a lot of them. If Ben was coming around with his wife.
Looking good, Mike.
That looks amazing.
No, wait, I'll tell you what
we've
it
got
is.
Some
cheese toasty and chutney.
So this, I saw this on your menu and I just thought I need to eat that.
Go on. Right.
So I've been making it. You actually do like beer onions on toast with melted Gruyere on top.
That's right, yeah.
I couldn't do that here. I couldn't really do
that
this
That looks
here.
Very good.
So I made
it?
A Gruyere toasty with onions.
Gruyere toasty with beer onions. So that looks amazing. Mate, and a crab curry in a small studio in Vauxhall. The producer.
This is cold. I wouldn't eat this.
Going as well. He's craving some. We'll sure pass them on.
I'm meant to bring some lime. Anyway, do try this.
Yeah, please jump into that. We're going to ask you, what is your three course?
It might not be that.
Your go-to three course dinner party meal, if you were cooking now.
Delicious, man.
Is it all right?
Yeah, it's really nice.
We're currently in the month of March.
A little bit sour.
Beginning of March.
In a nice way.
Mm.
He's not just in a fermenty way.
Yeah. Analyzing.
It's really nice.
Don't you think? Right, right?
Yeah,
it's nowhere near what you did.
Different.
Where were you from? Where was yours coming from?
As no idea.
In the world.
Completely
no, okay, right.
Yeah, just like tasty curry, as opposed to a specific kind of curry.
Right.
Yeah.
I've always thought it was a Malaysian. I don't know why.
Maybe. Indonesian, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I don't know whether was there coconut milk involved. Potentially. I can't remember.
I feel like there might have been.
Yeah. Were you even involved in the creation of that dish, Mike? I'm starting to doubt if you were.
Well, no, you would.
Yeah. No, it certainly was.
We'll continue to get involved.
Three course meal.
Yeah. Go and tell us.
Sorry.
I think my favourite thing, and I think if Ben was coming around, I would like to do this actually.
Okay. Nice.
The start would be pickled fish,
oh.
Which I might make. Or I might buy.
What sort of pickle? Like escovesci or like?
No, like
you're more
Scandi.
In Scandi pickles.
Yeah,
okay.
Like a selection of different pickled herrings.
Okay.
Fully garnished in a way that I've only had in Stockholm, which basically involves pickled fish, creme fraiche, chopped chives, chopped dill, chopped red onion, chopped egg.
Yeah, right? Okay.
Crisp breads, strong, hard cheese, aquavit, ice cold, small glass of beer. That's the starter.
So I'm getting the plate, wow. The schnapps and the beer.
All together.
And
we're
everyone's
there.
Tucking in.
Yes, exactly.
God, okay. You know exactly what you're doing there.
I don't know, because it's hard to think past that, because I really just want to eat that and then some fruit. But like, I think...
You could set that up with the Watsits.
Yeah.
We just segue into that, and I think everyone's happy.
And then, I don't know, I mean, could I give you a nice main course that we would all eat together?
I hope so.
Probably, yeah. I mean, I should be able to, right? I mean, I hate to say it, but probably a little bit more fish. I mean, I don't know, or just some very, very good beef, which we get excellent beef at the pub. I think the thing is that, like, I'm so used to meat being only what I get from the pub, because I don't eat meat at home, really. So,
yeah.
But the level to which we're buying is, like, is that all pork from Tom Farmer Tom. Like,
Farmer Tom.
There's not like anything else. So maybe just something like some chops and a green salad and I guess probably bread or potatoes, depending on how I was feeling. And potatoes might just be boiled potatoes with a lot of butter.
Yeah.
Because it's you and you're coming around to my house and I don't have to try very hard in some ways.
You don't have to try hard at all.
Because I feel like that's what I know you'll like.
You've lived in a small tent together for 2 weeks in Glastonbury. You don't have to make
an effort. I don't need to. There's no airs and graces. No, like, I'm not going to be a chef about it. But then I wouldn't be anyway because a fucking chef's a knobhead.
What food reminds you being a kid?
Yeah, please get in there.
That's fine.
What food reminds you being a kid?
Is that a bay leaf on top of it?
Spaghetti with hot dogs and ketchup.
Spaghetti with hot dogs and ketchup. Are those the same dish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My mom used to make it for us. Pasta. Cooked pasta.
Yeah, yeah.
Ketchup. Cut up hot dogs.
Yeah. Kind of like a sausage ragu, but just
not like
hot dogs. And, yeah. A kid's sausage ragu. Yeah.
Stop trying to make it nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When this was hot, this was delicious, I promise you.
I mean, it's nice now.
Okay, what's your like quick midweek lunch then?
That's beautiful.
The one thing that I have every week, once a week, is a falafel wrap. Okay.
From where?
From Falafel and Shawarma in Camberwell.
Yeah.
Oh, who, sorry.
No, this, that's just to be, that can be right signed now. Off, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, those onions are amazing.
Yeah, very nice. Anyway, yeah, because I think they're delicious and they're consistent and cheap.
It's outrageous value.
There's a lot of like insanely good lunch options in Camberwell. Theo's, they do panuzzo, which are like pizza sandwiches, which are fucking insane.
Yeah.
And really good value and super delicious. Then you've got the falafel and shawarma guy. There's a Vietnamese cafe around the corner called Cafe Viet that make Banh Mi. FM Mangal if you want a kebab. It's a lot of good gear.
If you could run a restaurant which isn't yours, any restaurant, which one would you like to
River Cafe.
Really?
Are you asking me what restaurant would I like to run for fun, or am I thinking about having a family and living a life? Because those two things are not always the same. So like in terms of my future, it would be great if I ran the River Cafe because I'd be minted.
Yeah.
Right? Plus the food's pretty good. Sometimes patchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we've all paid too much for a plate of food that isn't good enough.
Yeah.
We've also probably all had some sort of ambrosial things. So yes, that's the like practical shout. I think I would have loved for Mike's The Pizza Place to work. I look at Crisp in West London.
Yeah.
Carl, who is lovely.
Mm.
And I really feel a lot of inspiration from someone who can reduce what they're doing to one thing and find joy in examining variables and improving just in that craft. And I think he's done that. He's making delicious pizza. And
is it as good as it's hyped? I haven't been.
I love it.
Mm.
Okay. And I'll stand by it. I mean, I think it is fucking hyped and it's hard to get in now. I mean, I've been going a bit for a while, I guess, but like, I love pizza. It's my favourite food. Pickled fish, number two.
What about Breadstall?
Breadstall, I've never been to. Love to. Apparently, it's very good, yeah.
Yeah, because we were saying last week? They now do the Cornish pasty option, which is two-thirds savoury, one-third Nutella crust. Mike, we could have you here for hours, but I'm worried that the producer needs to go. So we're going to fire through your locations.
Sure.
And you're going to tell us where and why, and then we're going to come to an end. But I think we're going to have to get you back on because there's still a lot to talk about.
All right. I mean, if the food's this good, I'll come back.
Oh, yeah, the food's always this good.
It'll be better. It'll be warm next time.
Your go-to weeknight restaurant.
Do you know what? There's an Indian place in Forest Hill called Sparsh, which is like if Sean Connery said the word sparse.
Yeah.
Shout out to Benita for that. That's my wife.
That's her gag.
Very good.
Yeah.
And it's called Sparsh, Interestingly Indian. And it is interestingly Indian. And that's all I have to say
about
that.
That's all you need to say, yeah.
Favourite place for a special supper?
Again, kind of depends what you want, but I would always go classic. I might say Bentley's. I feel like, because the thing is, like, I love the idea of oysters and nice seafood in a kind of old London establishment. So yeah, probably Bentley's.
Best place for a date?
Campbell Arms is pretty good.
Especially when they say they're going to comp your food. <don't>.
Do you know what? It's been so long since I've been on a date. I don't know.
Your go-to pub?
Come on.
No, apart from the Campbell Arms, you can't. Sure. No, you can't bet that.
The Blythe Hill Tavern in Catford.
Okay. Why?
Because it's Irish run and owned, which means they know what they're doing. The Guinness is proper. They wear a shirt and tie behind the bar. They'll bring your Guinness to your table. It's fucking sensational. And
got the racing on in the day.
Yeah,
which is nice.
And
they have Tato's behind the bar.
Yep,
nice.
They have a hipster pizza van there on Thursday, Fridays, yeah, which Dough. Ordinarily you'd be like, what the fuck is this? And somehow it's good. Plus, you can get a takeaway there the rest of the week. So you're allowed to order your own food.
Which that I sounds think is pretty good. Pub, go yeah. to guilty pleasure.
I don't really feel guilty about eating food, but like probably shit pizza.
We're talking about pizza, not shit pizza. Where's the best pizza? Is it Crispin still?
It kind of depends, because I feel like if you want Neapolitan, no, and like Neapolitan has been the like culture of pizza in London for too long because of Franco Manca. Mm-hmm. But if it's Neapolitan, I'd say 081 in Peckham, and if not, it's Crisp. Shout out to Gracie's in St Albans, which is my friend Jim.
Shout out to them.
Oh, nice.
But yeah.
You've already given us two hidden gems, so we'll move past that. What about a bar or like venue? You know, you strike me as a guy who likes your music. I know you do. You went to Steely Dan gig in New York. You left early, which is an insult because Steely Dan are one of the greatest bands
how
ever.
How do you know that?
I mean, I do my research. Don't you
worry about how that? Do you know that?
Don't you worry about that?
No, I do worry about that.
No, but what I want to know is not why you
how
left.
How the fuck do you know that?
Why you left the Steely Dan gig early. I want to know what
because
is.
At that time, I didn't really like Steely Dan, and I do now.
They're brilliant. They play half. Well,
and what's even worse is that
it's
I left
tribute.
And then Frank and James went up to their hotel room and met the Eagles.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
And I went home to a bodega and got a Reuben, which to
that
be fair,
pretty good.
Pretty good, but not quite the same. Maybe had a wank.
What about venue?
The thing is, I've been to a lot of gigs at Brixton Academy over the years, and that is probably the answer to the question, because my first gig, and growing up in London, my first gig was when I was 13
yeah.
at Brixton Academy. I was in a lot of like...
Who was it?
The Vines, an Australian garage band. Yeah.
Your dream long weekend getaway and itinerary?
So two answers, I think. If it's with my wife, probably somewhere in the UK. Take our daughter, maybe our dog, drive there. Probably somewhere coastal, maybe Devon. Something like that, something really simple where we can walk and eat fish, and well, I can eat fish. Mm. And just be outside. And if it's not with her, maybe some... I mean, I really enjoyed going to San Sebastian for the first time. That's a very chefy answer, but like, I loved that.
What a place.
Wandering around, and I brought some dried apricots that I had imbued with mushroom drops. And we kind of were eating these like mushroomy apricots and cycling around on electric bikes, popping into bars. It was actually fucking wicked. It was so fun. So yeah,
best dish you had up there, the steak or
no? It was a fried squid sandwich with like a ridiculous aioli, like melt your face off aioli.
Well, Mike, you've been absolutely incredible. Thank you so much for coming. We're going to finish off with the three dishes, anything you mentioned today, from the pizza to the fried squid sandwich, there three dishes you can save. They don't necessarily have to be starter, main, pud, but what are the three things from everything you mentioned from your go-tos today
and what we've talked about yeah. today? Well, the pickled herring stays.
Yep.
I think pizza definitely has to be. I mean, I would say I love Roman style pizza, which we didn't really talk about, but like something all crisp. I mean, either of those things would be nice. Mm. I don't know. I mean, another one. Well, I mean, I love the fact that you've made this crab curry for me. I feel quite like moved by that. So thank you.
Pickled herring, crab and pizza. Mike, we're going to have to get you in for another rep because you've been absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, man.
Congratulations, 10 years of the Kemba Alums. And of course, Frank's Peckham, the greatest rooftop bar in Europe on top of a car park. We can't wait to be back there this summer. Thanks a lot for coming on. Thanks. Guys, don't forget to give us a 5-star rating, leave a comment, and we'll see you all next week.